The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Monday, June 21st. We're moving right along in the offseason, the best time of the year. It's coming up on my birthday. Tomorrow's my brother's birthday, by the way. Happy early birthday, Charlie. I know you're listening because you support my endeavors the same way I support yours, for sure. Anyway, we're going to have a mailbag episode on this podcast. We'll also be doing position rankings, ranking top 10 quarterbacks, top 10 wide receivers, top 10 running backs, all kinds of top 10s. We're ripping through that. If you want to watch these shows earlier than they are posted in the audio feed, you can do so on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/pick6 or search for Pick Six Podcast in the YouTube app. When you get there, hit the subscribe button. And if you're already watching on YouTube right now, how about you bang that like button? It helps us circulate amongst the tubes, and you will be a hero for doing that. You can also check out the Pick Six Podcast newsletter daily in your inbox, almost daily, written by John Breach. One day, Cody Benjamin, friend of the pod, of course, contributor to the podcast, I guess, actually, takes care of it on Wednesdays. Go to CBSSports.com/newsletters to subscribe to that. If you do that, it will help us out and potentially save Breach's family from being homeless. Joining us now to break down. Oh, I'm sorry. It's time for a
mailbag.
That's right. Ryan Wilson and John Breach. What's up?
You forgot to mention top 10 kickers and punters is also coming. So don't leave Breach out. Look at Breach's face. What do you think? Are we doing that?
That's a newsletter exclusive, Wilson. I'm not talking about it anywhere else. It's only going in the newsletter.
Brinson, can you name 10 punters? I can't. I'm not even going to try.
Probably given like some time, but not off the top.
Yeah, it would take like 2 hours would be the time I would need. Right. That's enough. I don't even know who's the best punter. Hecker?
Yeah, Johnny Hecker.
Yeah, Hecker struggled last year.
See, no one cares, Breach.
All right, let's dive into the mailbag. We got a lot to cover, as always. This is from Clemson Ryan. Get out of here. We don't want Clemson fans in here. It's an NC State
player. Oh, boy.
Just kidding. Wide receiver value. Just got into the podcast. Oh, sorry, he's a fresh listener. No, we don't want Clemson fans. Come on in.
No one alienates listeners like Will Brinson.
That's true. That should go on my
tombstone.
Tombstone, yeah.
I already ordered it.
Breach. Yeah, Breach has a tombstone business, oddly enough.
Not surprised. Actually, you know, my father-in-law is a mortician, so
watch. Oh, he and Breach can team up. I need
to call him and get in the business together.
Yeah, he would actually probably give you one for free for me.
Self-dunk.
Yeah. Anyway, Clemson Ryan says, just get wide receiver value. Just got into the podcast and absolutely loving it. Thank you. I was curious about wide receivers value. I think it's safe to say that Julio's value was driven down by the fact that he wanted out, but it seems like a fair number of receiver trades over the last couple of years haven't netted nearly the payout you would think they would. The Hopkins trade in particular comes to mind. Is this because the receivers that are getting traded either wanted out or the organization wants to get rid of them? Or is there a misevaluation going on by NFL franchises? Would be interested to hear what you guys think. This is a great question. So,
yeah, and it's go ahead.
Well, the two notable trades from last offseason were DeAndre Hopkins from the Texans to the Cardinals and Stephon Diggs from the Vikings to the Bills. We can also throw in Odell Beckham from the Giants to the Browns recently. And, of course, Brandon Cooks to 17 different teams.
Yeah,
over the last few years. I'm trying to think of another. Was there somebody else who was traded?
Antonio Brown.
Oh, Antonio Brown. Yeah, good call.
So I mean, there's been quite a few. I mean, Golden Tate, Amari Cooper. There are a bunch of receivers, and they get traded for just completely different levels of compensation. So I think there's a bunch of factors. I mean, Bill O'Brien, we just say it's a dysfunctional front office that has no idea what it's doing. That's how DeAndre Hopkins ends up being given away for basically nothing. With Julio Jones, you know, like the Falcons wanted a first round pick, but I don't feel like that was realistic because you're also asking a team to take on his $15 million salary. So that team is like, we're helping you with the salary cap, and we're not going to give you a first round pick on top of that. And so the Falcons are like, all right, fine, we'll take the second round pick because we're dumping, you know, this huge salary number. So I think salary cap plays a part in this. When it happens, plays a part in it. I think during the season. So if the trade happens right before the trade deadline, you're going to get higher compensation because teams are more desperate. They feel like they're only a player or two away, so they'll offer more. I think that's what we saw. Mohamed Sanu, he got traded for a second round pick when he went from the Falcons to the Patriots. Golden Tate got traded for a third round pick when he went from the Lions to the Eagles, I think. But that was a third round pick when most people are thinking, how is Julio Jones only getting a second round pick when Golden Tate's getting a third round, which is right there. We mentioned Antonio Brown. That was a third round and a fifth round pick that the Steelers got. And then Brinson, you mentioned Diggs, who got traded for a first round pick, which was a huge one. Amari Cooper got traded for a first round pick. So it just seems all over the place, depending on the timing of it, the contract situation, you know, and whether the front office is being run by a bunch of fools.
I totally forgot that Amari Cooper played for the Raiders. I mean,
yeah, kind of good too.
Honestly. That's how inconsequential his time was there. And that's a trade that actually worked out because I'm looking at some of these trades involving first round picks. You mentioned Brandon Cooks. It happened a couple times. 2018, he was traded from the Patriots to the Rams, and the Patriots got Isaiah Wynn, and they traded that pick. Prior to that, 2017, traded from the Saints to the Patriots. So the Patriots obviously get Brandon Cooks. And the Saints use those draft picks to get Ryan Ramczyk and Trey Hendrickson, excuse me. So I think the sort of one of the takeaways is when you're trading high value draft picks for a wide receiver, there's a real chance to make out on the other end. 2013, Percy Harvin went from the Vikings to the Seahawks. And let's see, the Vikings got, in terms of trade value, Xavier Rhodes and Jerick McKinnon, and then a late round pick. So again, I feel like the team trading the wide receiver tends to get the value, but to Breach's point, it also depends on when it happens. It also depends on whether, like Julio Jones and Antonio Brown, they want out of town and making life difficult for the team trying to trade them. So I just think there are a lot of variables you have to consider, but it is very volatile, to borrow your term from the last podcast, Brinson, in terms of trying to figure out what these guys are worth, because it depends on so much else sort of going around.
And by the way, the Debo has a trades involving wide receiver trades involving first round picks up on the screen. If you want to watch on YouTube, youtube.com/picksix. Worth noting, I don't think that I think this was generated in 2018. So this doesn't include the only other one is Stephon Diggs for Justin Jefferson, right?
First round pick involved?
Yeah, because
Stephon, oh, right. Yeah. Was the first round pick. Yeah.
That was the first round pick. And that's one, too, where it's really interesting because Stephon Diggs was maybe the best wide receiver in football last year. So trading him looks stupid, but then you come right back and you grab Justin Jefferson in the first round. And that looks like a good trade by the Vikings. Stephon Diggs wanted out. He wanted a huge contract. And so I'm not saying you upgrade it per se, but you relative to the contract and all that, I think both parties are happy there, the Bills and the Vikings. I think when you look at some of these, and this may be why the wide receiver trade market is a little suppressed, is that most of these didn't work out well.
Right. I mean,
Deion Branch from the Patriots to the Seahawks for a first-round pick, that didn't work out. You know, Roy Williams traded for – what are we doing, Cowboys?
Yeah, that was so long ago, it almost feels like it's not even the same era.
Percy Harvin had won a Super Bowl with the Seahawks, but that was a bad trade. Brandon Cooks – Did the Pats win the Super Bowl with Brandon Cooks?
Well, and to put that Percy Harvin trade,
he was hurt.
Percy Harvin trade into perspective is Seattle turned around and traded him in 2014 for a sixth round pick.
Right, exactly. The Randy Moss deal from Minnesota to Oakland was an abject disaster. The Patriots, I wouldn't say the Rams, it didn't work out for the Rams when they acquired Brandon Cooks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, they ended up trading him to the Texans for a second round pick. So, I think that's probably part of it, is that if trading a first round pick for a veteran wideout traditionally has not worked out that well. In the cases where it has, or in the cases where, you know, somebody where you're trading for a wide receiver, the ones that have worked out well were, you know, Randy Moss from the Raiders to the Patriots, where they got him on, you know, for like a fourth round pick, or the Diggs thing. I mean, Diggs worked out well. Hopkins was for a second round pick. And that was a case. I mean, that's sort of a unique situation.
But they've got to be a superstar like a Diggs or a Moss, because most teams are going to think, why would I give you a first round pick when I can just draft a receiver in the first round who might only be maybe not as good, but they're going to be 10 times cheaper. And if they're 90% as good, that's a fair payoff. So you're not just going to give up a first round pick.
I think that the, if you're trading for players that you can't easily replace, and I think to Breach's point, wide receivers are actually a little easier to replace than maybe we think they are. But I think quarterback obviously makes the most sense that you give a first round or first round pick plural. Cornerback and edge rusher. Maybe offensive tackle, but I think that actually is probably fourth on the list. And I think that's it. Like, I don't think you trade a first round pick for a wide receiver.
What is the stat where it's like no, it's something like a team that's drafted a wide receiver with a first round pick hasn't won the Super Bowl in like 20 years or something?
Something crazy like that, I think.
Something crazy like that. I mean, we should know that, I guess. But
that has since changed because Mike Evans won it last year.
Oh, right. That's a good point. Yeah. And that team also felt a little different. But the point being is that, especially with the influx of talent in the last few years in terms of wide receivers, you know, you see guys like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside come in the league, Jalen Reagor, guys like that come in the league. Where no, I'm just kidding.
Devontae Smith.
Yeah. Okay. There's just been a bunch of young wide receivers coming to the league the last couple of years, and I think that that's made teams a little less inclined to give up a first-round pick for a veteran wide receiver because you can get one on a cheaper deal. The other thing about all these veteran wide receiver trades, DeAndre Hopkins, Stephon Diggs, Odell Beckham, I'm trying to think, maybe Percy Harvin, almost all of these dudes that are being traded, when they get to their new landing spot, they want a new contract. And that's a big factor. You know, the Texans complained that they didn't want to pay DeAndre Hopkins. Well, they look stupid. You know, the Giants didn't want to pay, you know, Odell Beckham had gotten a new deal, but then he wanted a new deal when he got to Cleveland. Yeah, that deal looks okay for the Giants right now. It could cut both ways. I think the Diggs and the fact that Diggs and Hopkins did it, especially in a pandemic year, makes you look really stupid when they dominate, especially because, you know, again, the Vikings got away with it. The, you know, the
that Vikings Bills trade looks like one of those even trades of all time. You know, you try to write the winner or losers thing a couple of years later, and it's like, wow, they both won.
That is primarily because the Vikings, either through luck or skill, got the right wide receiver. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. All right. Next question. That's a great question, Clemson Ryan. Thanks for.
Yeah, you dumping all over him, and then he busted out a great question.
I'm just a Clemson fan.
Yeah, I like Clemson. Clemson's great.
And has a terrible name. Is that what you're going to say?
No, if Clemson could quit beating.
No, Ryan. I was making it Ryan.
What? It would be nice. Mailbag question from I Lovish. I would love to get you guys' opinion on this take. So after another year of mediocrity and lack of growth, the Bengals decided to cut ties with Zach Taylor. Glimpse into your future, Breach.
Wait, so far, yeah, so good.
Meanwhile, Joe Brady is helping Sam Darnold have the best season of his career, seen as the hottest coaching candidate of 2021. Next offseason, the Bengals hired Joe Brady, reuniting with Burrow and Chase. Thoughts on this happening?
Breach, I'll let you go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, is this a hypothetical, or is this guy can actually see the future? Because this all seems very realistic. I would just say real quick that I would not if Joe Brady crushes it in Carolina with Sam Darnold and they fired Zach Taylor, I would love for them to reunite Brady and Burrow and get Brady in Cincinnati. Now, that being said, I don't think Mike Brown would do it. He's the type of guy who would feel burnt by what they're not going to hire the same thing they just hired, which is an offensive minded guy with no prior head coaching experience. I don't think they're going to go the same well twice if they had to fire Zach Taylor. So I think they'd go with somebody maybe a little bit more established. So even though I like it, I don't think the Bengals would do it. Yeah. Right. Jackson.
Brinson, let me ask you this. I mentioned this at the very end of the last podcast. Would you rather have Joe Brady as this scenario plays out, or would you trade 3 first round picks for Kyle Shanahan if you're the Bengals?
I would trade 3 first round picks for Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I would be willing to give Joe Brady a chance.
Joe Brady's like 31.
I'm giving him a 2-year deal.
2-year deal. He ain't signed a 2-year deal, numbnuts.
You give Kyle Shanahan Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, Tyler Boyd, and T. Higgins, along with
Joe Mixon,
and I guess upgraded offensive line. He's doing work.
By the way, this is extremely telling on Breach's part. This is a man who has seen this organization flounder for years, and he's hesitant as to whether he would spend three first round picks on Kyle Shanahan. You could go through the history of the Bengals drafts for a first round pick.
You clowns let Bill Walsh leave, right? Did you send him to say, like, get out of here, loser? We don't
kicked
need
him to the curb. Kicked him to the curb.
The curb. Bill Walsh, maybe the greatest offensive coach in the history of professional football, reinvented offensive football as we know it. He was in the Bengals' back pocket, and they told him to get lost. And you've been floundering in mediocrity since then, and you just won't trade three first-round picks for Kyle Shanahan?
Kyle Shanahan is no Bill Walsh.
Marvin Lewis is probably the second best coach in Bengals history.
I would rehire Marvin Lewis.
That's why you're the Bengals.
Marvin Lewis working for in their
Arizona State.
He's helping orchestrate Herm Edwards'
illegal recruiting ring.
I love that Pete Prisco, Arizona State alum, is happy that they're cheating. He wants them to cheat better so they can win a national title.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
But for real, Marvin Lewis is the second best coach in Bengals history. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure.
Breach?
Yeah.
Ahead of Forrest Gregg?
It depends. You have Paul Brown in there. You have Sam Weish. Forrest Gregg, who went to a Super Bowl even though it wasn't there long. So
is Zach Taylor the fifth best Bengals coach in history?
I don't know. No. I've said it a few times this offseason. I do think that if Zach Taylor doesn't hit six wins, the Bengals should get rid of him. So this is his make or break year. And, you know, if Sam Darnold and the Panthers go 13-4 because their offense is unstoppable because of something that Brady's doing down there, then, yeah, you talk to Joe Brady and you say, all right, man, we want to team you up with Joe Burrow again, and we're going to hire you.
Here's the other thing about Joe Brady. Look, maybe Joe Brady will be great this year. The offense was okay last year. You know, they tried to throw freaking Teddy B under the bus, and he threw them back under the bus. Joe Brady was not the offensive coordinator at LSU. He was the passing game coordinator. But because he's so young and because he had worked with New Orleans and had been a coordinator, you know, like a little assistant coach in New Orleans, everybody's hot to trot for him.
Where did he go to college?
I don't know.
William and Mary.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Oh, we don't want him then. Oh. Bengals don't want him.
Dude, that would be funny. A William and Mary guy leading the Bengals to success.
Two William and Mary coaches in the AFC North. How about that?
That's too many. That's too many.
Yeah, one is winning enough championships while you sit there.
Ooh, and that would mean that William and Mary would have more head coaches than...
Ooh, that's what Breach doesn't want.
What? No, they wouldn't.
Why not? 3 versus 2? Can you...
That's assuming that no Miami of Ohio players get hired as a head coach. Also next offseason, Ryan. Bold assumption.
Who would be the logical candidate since you have...
He can't even name another player.
I mean, there's so many. Roethlisberger just becomes a coach in Pittsburgh.
I tell you this much, I would happily let Roethlisberger coach the Bengals. I know how that's going to go. Yeah, I'm begging for Zach Taylor.
Somebody take that dunk button away from Brinson. all right, let's
player coach Ben Roethlisberger.
But I don't think I agree with you, Breach. I think Mike Brown would probably go. He's a very like ex-girlfriend style guy who's going to hire the opposite side. But that they did clearly at least ask Joe Burrow about drafting Ja'Marr Chase. So maybe they would at least ask him about hiring Joe Brady. And so I wouldn't take it off of the table.
I don't know. They hired Zach Taylor. That was sort of off the radar.
Yeah. And then he couldn't hire a defensive coordinator for like 7 months. Couldn't find anybody who wanted to be his DC. It was
no one wanted the job.
No one wanted the job.
Would you want the job?
No.
No.
You're good job.
I'd rather be on this podcast than be the Bengals defense coordinator. No. And that's me.
I mean, in theory, you could probably make more than the Bengals defensive coordinator over the length of this podcast. How many years of this podcast will get around, like 10 years for you to make the...
And then you're going to get fired after 1 year.
You see, the Bengals DC is gone after 1 or 2 years, right? And you're not getting a great salary because you're the 18th choice. Yeah, I think this podcast might be more lucrative over the long term and certainly safer from a job stability standpoint. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Julio, Julio, Julio. This is from Omanate. Says, Julio, Julio, Julio. Yo, AJ Brown should change his jersey number 7 so the 1 and 2 receivers can be 7-11. They always open. That's
pretty good. I like that.
Anyways, by the end of the season, who do you think will be the lead back for Dallas? What a swerve.
Had to get the AJ Brown Julio joke in there. Unfortunately, Julio changes number to 2, so that's off the table.
That's true. 7-Eleven would be always open. That would be great. You should just leave with that, and then ask the Dallas question in a different review.
Or don't even ask a question. Just leave it, and we'll read it, and we'll all laugh.
Yeah,
that's the George Costanza joke telling. You got to know when you're. I'm out.
People laugh. You're like, all right, good to see ya. You walk out of your job at noon. Anyway, by the end of the season, who do you think will be the lead back for Dallas? TP, Tony Pollard, or Zeke, Ezekiel Elliott? Because I can totally see Zeke dropping the ball in the season like he did last year. Thank you. I love listening to the pod. Who do you think, Breach?
Well, I think that Jerry Jones is just absolutely determined to make sure he gets as much value out of the horrible Ezekiel Elliott contract as possible. So if they didn't bench him last season when he was fumbling every other touch, there's no path for him to get benched. He's just going to play until the Cowboys can get rid of him after his contract runs out. So I think the answer is Zeke.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And the good news is, of course, that Dak Prescott's coming back. So maybe that helps Zeke. It will certainly help Dak if they have some balance there. But so let's see what his contract is looking like. So
I think they can get out of it after 2022.
So 2021, he's base salary, $9.6 million. His dead cap hit in 2021, Brinson, if you had to guess, what do you think his dead cap hit is?
In 2021, I would guess $25 million.
I'll say $29
million. $36.9 million.
He's going to be the lead back. Also, let's not sleep on the fact that just 2 days ago, Dak Prescott asked about Zeke. Zeke looks great. Prescott told Calvin Watkins, old pal at Fanhouse of the Dallas Morning News, he's in the best shape of his life. Yeah, put it in my
face. We had a drinking game where he had to drink every time someone said they were in the best shape of their life. We would never be sober for a podcast.
This is best shape of your life season.
After 2020.
Everybody seen the clips of him working out independently with his running back coach, his cuts, just how explosive he is. Excited to have a full year with him again and getting him healthy throughout the whole season. Sorry,
go ahead. As Breach noted, after 2022, there is an out post June 1st trade. The dead cap hit will only be $4.1 million that year and $6.7 million the next year. Post 6-1 release, a little dicier, $16.5 million dead cap hit in 22, $6.7 million in 2023. So if they really want to do it, they can after this season. Otherwise, he is on the books till 2026.
He ain't going anywhere. He's the lead back. They drafted him with a top five pick. They drafted him ahead of Jalen Ramsey.
And he is only... contract.
They paid him before they paid Dak Prescott. They love Zeke.
He's only 25.
He's not going anywhere for 3-4 years.
I think 2 more years he's there. Because then it does get considerably cheaper after 2023 season, you can sort of dump him if you want to. And he's only 28 that year. Okay. He's the guy. Tony Pollard is the...
Sorry, Tony. You don't have a big enough contract.
He's a relief pitcher.
I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, that's just, Tony Pollard would get run. But remember, this happened with Jason Garrett. And we heard, was it Cole Beasley? Well, after he left, said, yeah, I mean, the guys upstairs tell them who to
politics.
If they trade a first round pick for Amari Cooper, you feed Amari Cooper. Jerry Jones is going to tell Mike McCarthy. If Mike McCarthy tries to start Tony Pollard, Mike McCarthy will lose his job.
Here's the question. Who's there longer in Dallas, Zeke Elliott or Mike McCarthy?
Oh, Zeke Elliott.
Breach?
Zeke.
Wow. No hesitation from either of you.
I mean, based on the contracts, you would handicap it with Zeke. I mean, you know, like if Mike McCarthy's going to win enough games to be there for 4 years.
McCarthy's not changing. That's what we learned last year.
Exactly. But he went to the PFF headquarters once. So that's.
Yeah. He went for a tour and didn't listen. He had the headphones listening to the wrong channel.
That's right. Mailbag question from D Levy 123. Hey, super friends, shout out from Canada. What's up?
Woo, woo.
Canada? Yeah, Canada.
Been listening to the podcast for a few years now, and I love the mix of useful insights and hilarious banter. Definitely my go-to football podcast all year long. Thank you for listening. My question for you is, I've noticed in other sports like basketball and hockey, there's a large draw to have stars in big markets, and whenever a star is unhappy on their current team, rumors with a U come out, like the Fleetwood Mac album, come out as that they will join teams in LA or NYC. Football media and the league as a whole don't seem to mind having their big stars in quote small markets like Mahomes in KC, Rodgers in Green Bay for now, Josh Allen in Buffalo, etc. Why is this the case? Appreciate it and keep up the great work. That's a great question as well. Man, really good, thoughtful questions from our listeners this week.
I don't know if it's by design or not, but I think it actually makes it more interesting to have the smaller markets have superstars. I mean, like Patrick Mahomes in New York City, playing for the Jets, that doesn't seem to me as fun as playing in Kansas City in the Midwest, where there's fans love the Chiefs. That's the, you know, the only show in town. Like New York or LA, there's a million things going on, and that's sort of the joke. Like in Los Angeles, especially, they have two teams there now in Los Angeles. They have USC, they have UCLA basketball, they have the Dodgers, they have the, are they called the Anaheim Angels now? What are they called? Anaheim. And sure. Like, you don't even know, you can't split your time up to focus on one thing. So I think like the Packers historically make sense there. The Steelers, the Bills being good is huge for Western New York. But I don't know, like I said, if it's by design or otherwise, but I like the idea of it being sort of fair and balanced, if you will, Breach.
But I also think that the NFL is in a better spot because you see other leagues, they want to have their big name players in the bigger city. So that's better from a marketing standpoint. The NFL doesn't need to market itself because it's already the most popular sport. So what they want is to be as balanced as possible. And to be as balanced as possible means you have superstars playing for these small market teams. And so, and you know, some of the small market teams are the storied franchises. Like the Green Bay Packers are a great example of, they're the smallest market in the NFL, but they're also one of the most notable teams that, they've been around for 100 years. They've won multiple Super Bowls. And so you want that team to always be good. So, I mean, the NFL's put itself in a good spot that it's not reliant on how TV ratings do with your biggest markets or this or that, because you have revenue sharing. You have just, everything's created to be equal. So there's no, you're not forced to put your big stars in your big markets.
Yeah, okay. I don't, that's exactly right. They don't require their best players in their biggest markets. It's just sort of how it is. I mean, they don't need Aaron Rodgers on the New York Jets. And the other thing, here's the other thing about football versus basketball and hockey, is that because of the length of the season, it is much easier for, you can get optimistic about the Jets or the Giants for a random season, even when they don't look like they might be that great. This year's a great example. Jets and Giants fans are kind of pumped up. Knicks fans have been expected to be terrible for years, right? They expect to be bad. And you need a superstar to flip a team. The NBA needs the Knicks to be good for the Knicks to be relevant, for the Knicks to drive ratings and to help them from a financial perspective. You know what the NFL doesn't need? The Jets or the Giants to be good. The Jets haven't been good ever. The Jets were good for 2 years outside of Joe Namath, you know, winning the Super Bowl. The Jets have never been good, and the Jets still sell tickets and do ratings. It doesn't matter that the Jets suck. Their fans still like show up and root for them and watch them on TV. And the same thing for the Giants. Even though the Giants are bad, the fans still show up. And I think that's true almost universally, with the exception of course, a couple of teams that will bounce when, you know, they'll leave town if the fans don't show up, the Chargers for an example, maybe. And then I guess the Raiders never really lacked popularity. It's just fans are more loyal to the NFL is just king, and they're going to keep showing up even when the teams are bad.
It's also because they now play 17 games, whereas there are 162 baseball games, and you're not coming out to see
41 home NBA games of a 5-win team or something.
Nine no names on the field or 5 no names on the court. So yeah, that also probably, if there are only 15 basketball games and 15 baseball games, you would go out there and watch anybody, you know, if that was your team. So that probably also has something to do with it.
And it's easier to sell tickets for, you know, the Jets and the Giants. You're selling 8 games.
You only have to sit there for 16 to what's 13 times 3. 26 hours, is that right?
39.
Nice math.
You were close.
16. Oh, sorry. No, 24 hours, 8 times 3 for the home games. So, you know, between 16 and 24 hours of your life spent watching terrible football, whereas you could spend 500 hours watching baseball games if you really want to see some terrible baseball.
Also, I think, I'm just trying to, the way that the revenue works for like baseball and basketball too, you know, you have local TV deals. Right.
Oh yeah. I don't know the details.
National television deals for football. So the Jets are sold as a part of a bigger package, no matter whether they're good, bad, or, you know, it doesn't matter. So that changes up your revenue sharing too. So there's a lot of different factors in it. And that is mostly why. All right. Next question. Blame big eye test. This is from Swift Jam John. He's a little arrow. Swift John. I don't know if it's like a jam John. I don't know what's going on. It's a bit of a miracle. It's a bit of a miracle that this is the lead NFL podcast for CBS, and that's a compliment. Is it? You guys aren't getting the typical starts.
Backhanded compliment.
What's that?
Is that a backhanded compliment? Is that how those go?
Yeah.
Let's keep reading.
Let's keep reading and find out how he meant it. You guys, you aren't getting the typical starch rundown of obvious bullet points by guys who were just thrown together. Brinson is both engaging and infuriating, almost by design. That is actually how I was created in a lab. Often interrupting the person he just questioned. Yep. But he's good at this. Okay, we'll take it. Wilson works in subtleties and operates as a kind of straight man curve on Brinson. Preach has great energy and information. They consult analytics but don't overweight it. They also make you laugh. I've heard other media say they don't pretend to understand everything happening on the field, which leads to my five-star question.
By the way, I want to make basically Breach has great energy and information. That's basically saying Breach has a great personality.
I'm fine with that. That's quite the compliment.
Go ahead with the question.
Do the host consume football strategy, X's and O's, or did you at some point? If so, do you have a good basic strategy book recommendation, or is it more important just to have a basic understanding of what different coaches are using and how effective they are? Does anyone use the eye test besides Prisco? Discuss. Thanks for all the hours, guys. That's a good question.
What's the eye test? Prisco just eyeballs guys?
I think film, watching film. I will watch film at various points during the season I don't consistently watch film the way I wish I did. I blame that on my family, strictly on my family. Yeah. Instead of my own laziness and procrastination, I pin that on my family. That's just how it's going to be. I think that I tend to sort of lean on, I trust my eyeballs as a sports fan in most cases, whether it's in baseball, golf, basketball, or football. Like that's when I'm able to watch whatever to watch on the field, I can tell. I trust my eyeball test when watching guys play football or any sport that I can sort of say, all right, I think that guy's going to be good. Now, of course, it's not 100% right. Never is. But I'm also not going to tell you that I can break down offensive line play. Most people can't. You need to be a former offensive lineman usually to break down offensive line play. Even guys who do deep dive film studies to a degree are largely guessing because
even places like Pro Football Focus, you know, coaches and players will say they don't know what the assignments were, so they're missing on some of this, and those guys are people who watch film literally 23 hours a day, 364 days a year. So there is it is kind of hard to
why 364? What do they do on the last day?
Maybe they take one day off.
Oh, okay.
They can't have a day off, Ryan.
You didn't know how many days are in a year, did you?
I know how many days are in a year. I said 23 hours a day also. Now how many hours are in a day? My God, it's turning into a...
59 minutes an hour?
Insulting. 59. Everyone knows that.
Exactly.
Just to go on with what Brinson's saying is that there's so much information that it's unless you play the game at the professional level, it's hard to kind of grasp it all.
I would say that... A couple of good options if you want to learn. And look, I mean, I've read these books, so they help. They help you learn football strategy, help you learn schemes and all that stuff. One, Chris Brown wrote two books, Smart Football and The Art of Smart Football. Those are really good books. He does a great job with those. Blood, Sweat, and Chalk. I thought I'd had these behind me, but I don't. They're somewhere in my office, which is... I'd show you the camera, but it's everything strewn about. Blood, Sweat, and Chalk with Tim Layden of Sports Illustrated is a really good book breaking down sort of the history and the way that certain schemes have developed. And The Essential Smart Football is the other one by Chris Brown. And I'm Pat Kerwin's Keep Your Eye Off the Ball, our teammate at CBS. Pat Kerwin's the man, by the way. Awesome dude. And he wrote a great book. It's Keep Your Eye Off the Ball. It's How to Watch Football. Pat was a former executive in the NFL. Now has worked on NFL and CBS for years. There's also a ton of, you know, if you get into it a little bit deeper, and you, I would say those are good. I don't want to call them surface level, but good introductory
foundational
books that'll help you if you want to get into the strategy and the X's and O's and schematics of football. And then once you from there, you can sort of decide like how hard you really want to dive in, because there's a lot of different stuff you can buy. I mean, you can get like you know, Bill Walsh's coaching Bible. It's really expensive. It's like $300 or something on Amazon, but you can get Bill Walsh's, his approach, his holistic approach to football. You can find different stuff online where guys break down certain schemes for each team, you know, like the Kansas City offensive breakdown and all of that. So I think that those are probably good examples of books that you could buy to help you figure out how to dive into football, if that's what you were so interested in doing.
Yeah, for me, so the X and O stuff, I never watched like all 22 film until I had to start doing the draft stuff. And when you're trying to sort of study cornerbacks and safeties, wide receivers, you can't really do it if you're just watching like the broadcast copy. So once you start doing that, as Breach noted, you have no idea what the coverages are. You have no idea what the routes are. And what you find out is that it really helps to have a general idea of how coverages work and how route combinations work to understand what teams are trying to do. And I mentioned this before and I mentioned it again, like the QB School YouTube with JT O'Sullivan is an awesome resource and it's free. And if you like that, you can actually join his Patreon page and go from there. He does more in-depth stuff, but he's a former quarterback. He played in like a million different systems, former Bengals quarterback at one point. So if you're interested in seeing how the Bengals offense ran 10 years ago, but his YouTube page is like a fantastic place to start. And also like you can find like really good stuff that's actually not long reads, but it requires you to sort of focus, because like one of the things that I bought last year on Kindle was called the Pass Coverage Glossary by this guy named Cameron Sorin, who I think actually is like a lawyer in his real life, but he at some point in his life understood the nuances and all the different coverages that teams run. And, you know, just sort of something that if you're interested in, and it goes over the basics like cover two, cover three, cover one, and then goes more in depth from there and sort of all the things you can run off of that. And that's something you can just sort of, It's not a book. It's literally telling you what each player's responsibility is on a given call on the covers they're running. And if that's something you're trying to become better at, that's a way to go. And like I primarily, like I said, just watch college sort of all 22 and people that I know that I ask questions about in terms of what's going on there. They always say the college system is like the schemes they run is so much more simplified than what the NFL is doing. And I would imagine if I had any sort of paid any attention to the NFL all 22, it would take me forever to have any idea what's going on, because I don't understand, you know, 75% of the things I'm looking at in college in terms of coverages. And that's why it's also important to have people that you can sort of bounce those things off of.
But even not that specific. And I know he asked about strategy here, and I think strategy in football is so interesting. Cause you look at, we talked about Bill Walsh earlier. You know, he comes up with a West Coast offense and that takes over the NFL. And then all of a sudden, if you're an NFL team, now if you're a defensive coordinator, you've got to come up with a defense that can stop the West Coast offense. And so things keep escalating and coaches keep coming up with new things, whether it's Buddy Ryan back in the 80s coming up with a new kind of defense, or it's Dick LeBeau bringing in the zone blitz and you're having safeties blitzing. Things like that didn't exist 30 or 40 years ago, and someone thought, hey, why don't we do this differently? Why don't we drop our defensive tackles back into coverage? Because no one had really ever thought of that before. When the Bengals went to the Super Bowl in 88, they did it because they were running a no-huddle offense that teams in the NFL had never thought to run a no-huddle offense for an entire game. They were doing it in two-minute drills, and some coach just said, why don't we do this for the entire game, because it's worked so well in two-minute drills. So you just have these coaches who are thinking outside the box, and we still see it going on today. You know, Andy Reid's coming up with offensive schemes that work in Kansas City all the time, no matter who the quarterback is, whether it's Alex Smith or Patrick Mahomes. And even though we're in a passing league, you see John Harbaugh say, you know what, we're going to buck that trend and we are going to run the ball and we're going to run it down everyone's throat, because all these defenses are designed to stop the pass. And I think we can successfully run. And now the Ravens, running for the most yards of any team in NFL history, are running for 400 yards in a game last year, things that were just unheard of. But when you're playing against defenses that are set up to stop the pass, all of a sudden you have the advantage because you're running the ball all the time. And so it's just seeing coaches be creative and, you know, just understanding all that football strategy, I think, is one of the most fascinating things of the game.
It's funny you mentioned that, Breach, because that reminded me of something I saw on Twitter last week. And it was a tweet from James Light that talked about Bill Belichick going into detail about why Dick LeBeau's zone blitz package was so effective at attacking the West Coast offense. And there is I don't know this website, but I know James Light does good stuff. And he mentioned Throw Deep Publishing. Throw Deep Publishing has a compilation of all of Bill Belichick's thoughts on strategies and fundamentals. And it's called The Big Book of Belichick. And it's $25 as I look at it here. I don't know if it's an ebook or not. But if that's something you're interested in terms of strategy, I think there's probably no better place to start than getting Bill Belichick's idea on everything under the sun. So that's certainly less X's and O's and more strategy, as Breach was talking to. And maybe that's something you're looking for.
Agreed. Great breakdown. I would say, I mean, check out those books. If you know, and the other thing too is that with the way that the media has evolved in 2021, there are a ton of people out there producing content that is really beneficial to allowing you to learn. You know, like for instance, Jeff Schwartz, friend of the program, does. He's doing like a big boys club thing where he's having conversations with other offensive linemen about scheme related stuff. And they're so, you didn't have this really 10 years ago where these guys would finish their NFL careers and would come into the media and be doing scheme schematic stuff. You know, mostly you would finish your career and you go and do hot takes on ESPN or whatever it was. You know, like you're talking about the narrative surrounding things. And now it's a lot, there's a lot more room. Oh, the other thing I would do is watch NFL matchup show. DVR that on ESPN or ESPN2, whatever it's on, with Greg Cosell, Sal Palantonio, and Matt Bowen. They do a great breakdown of that. I usually record that on Saturday, watch it every Sunday morning, and you'll get good scheme insights into different things. So highly recommend checking that out. I just think there's a ton of media you can consume, and then you can start watching the film yourself. You know, if you want to figure out, all right, like why did this happen? You can get the All-22. You can buy it for like $150 from NFL.com. And so highly recommend all of those resources. Any other thoughts?
And always listen to the Pick Six podcast. That's my last thought.
That's right. That goes back to the heart of the question is like, we didn't start this podcast for it to be.
That ain't our lane.
Well, but.
Well, and also I think that talking about stuff like X's and O's and X's and O's specifically is easier on a television show where everyone is visually watching. So you can, you know, watch a play or describe what someone should have done or how a coverage broke down. You know, when you're just talking about it in a, well, there's no visual, it can be tough for people to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. And
also not our lane.
Well, but I mean, look, it's hard to watch 16 games and break down like the X's and O's of every game, you know, on Sunday night. Like that's not really something you're going to be able to pull off. Additionally, just based on our general personalities, this show wasn't going to be a rigid rundown of here are the hot topics of the day. Talk to you about in a serious manner because the National Football League demands reverence. Damn it. You know, this is kind of a fun podcast. It's always going to be a fun podcast. It's going to be goofy. It's going to be, it's going to feel loose. For lack of a better phrase.
As people often say, it feels like you're listening to some idiots yell and scream at each other at a bar.
But that's what we want.
This ain't the NFL matchup.
People think this isn't a carefully curated attitude that we have on this podcast. Buddy, this has taken 40 years to develop. This loose, lackadaisical attitude. Anyway, that's the Mailbag Show. Thanks for listening. I wonder if Brooks Koepka won the U.S. Open. He was rampaging on.
Maybe that's your birthday present.
That would not be a birthday present. John Rahm wouldn't even be a birthday present. Brooks, I can do it, Brooks. Or Price. Anyway, you guys have it.
New CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.